Hey guys, my name is John, and you're listening to TCK Tales. This is going to be the final episode of Season 1. I hope you guys have enjoyed Season 1 as much as I have, and I'm really excited for this last episode. I think it's going to be really, really good for everyone, just a really good closer. Today we have a story from one of my best friends. They've all been one of my best friends, but this man specifically has really poured into my life. His name is Juwabi. He has been a very important part of my life, specifically here at Moody, and he's really been a place for wise counsel. And you're going to hear a lot of his story. You're going to hear pretty much his entire story. And I think it's important because he is going to talk about the importance of healing. It's a bit of a longer episode. He does talk about some really dark things. So if you are sensitive or you've struggled with depression, this is kind of like your warning here that it's good, but you should be careful in listening to it. So here is Juwabi with his TCK tale.
Hi there, I'm Juwabi Andrade. I am an MK from Brazil. I was born in South Florida back in November 11th, 1995. My parents were church planners. I was born to a family of church planners. My dad was a pastor over a church in the Brazilian community that was umbrellaed under a Presbyterian church. I'm an American Presbyterian church in South Florida. And so I grew up with a very distinct Brazilian background, growing up in tropical weather of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and the surrounding area, and with Brazilians in and out of our house all the time, and being at church with Brazilians. But also the flip side was my mom's American. She was from Ohio. My dad's Brazilian, from Recife, and they met each other on the missions field in England and married, and they came to the States, and that's where I was born. And you know, they followed God's call, and I was born into this context of cross-cultural and urban kind of missions. It was a really interesting time. I have a lot of fond memories from when I was, right before I left to Brazil, when I was 8. It was a really interesting upbringing, but it worked out well, I would say, in the long term. My first spoken language was Portuguese, which was odd in America for me. Now that I reflect, I was like, wow, you know, even with an American mom and in Florida, you know, going to an American school and all that, and it was a good private school. And but my first language that I can remember speaking and communicating in was Portuguese, and English was my second language, and so it caused some trouble. Later on, we go to Brazil. We stay there for 2 years. So we come back when I'm 10. And that transition was really hard. Both transitions, you know, going in country and coming out into Brazil. Brazil, America. Yeah, and then for the next, I would say, 11 years? It was 11 years. I was in and around Nashville, Tennessee. Grew up in this town called Murfreesboro. And yeah, it was a good country life. Hung out with farmers and people from the suburbs of Nashville, and all kinds of, you know, fun, but also some hardship too, trying to find out who I am. And a lot of what every teenager goes through, trying to find their identity and who they are and what's it mean, in my case, to be a man. I had more going on as an MK, which I didn't know about. No idea. But another thing to kind of bear in mind, too, is when I went to Brazil, I didn't go with a missions organization. My family, my mom and dad, didn't go in with a missions organization. They went in to start a English school. And it went well for the first 2 years, but one thing led to another with government and corruption and finances, and it just... it was obvious it was time to go. So yeah, we come to the States and grew up in that with that in the background, and yeah, all this craziness going on in my mind that I didn't know which right questions to ask, I suppose, because there was no sending organization to welcome us back and ask us, you know, let's check on how the kids are doing, you know, how's that transition going. I didn't know that even existed, to be completely honest. I knew of missionaries, but I just assumed they all went out on their own. I never knew that they were missionary organizations until I go to the Moody Bible Institute for college, and I get my acceptance letter, which was awesome. And, you know, and I was kind of holding my breath because I was like, this is where I felt God wanted me to go. But I wasn't really quite sure what, because I was not, quite frankly, interested in ministry per se. But I did want to help people, and I did want to learn scriptures and theology more. So, yeah, I applied, and it was the only school I applied to, and I got accepted. And about a couple weeks later after that, I got an email from Moody's International Student Office with a invite to join the International Student Office's early orientation for international students and MKs. And I didn't remember putting down on my application that I was an MK at all, because I didn't consider myself that, because I knew kids who were in missionary families, but I didn't consider myself a missionary kid. It never occurred to me. It was like going to my dad's home, his hometown in Brazil. So yeah, I wasn't so sure, but my mom and my dad encouraged me to do so. Maybe I would meet people that, have that international background, and it'd be good to go there early and meet new people. And so I did, and I went, and I met some of my dearest friends, my future roommate, who at the time drove me up the wall. He was this guy from Romania, and yeah, I met the leadership for Moody's Missionary Kid organization called Mukapa, and those guys became my friends, my very close friends, and the International Student Fellowship Group as well, which was the student group on campus which focused on helping international students. When I came to Moody, I came and I had a wonderful first year as a freshman. I got to meet people who were like me. I got to meet other students who wanted to learn the Word of God seriously, besides MKs and international students. The other peers of mine who are monocultural American, grew up in the Midwest or wherever else in the United States, are all people who, for the most part, want to know who God is more and dive deeper into the Word and grow. Yeah, it was really smooth sailing for that first year. Second year, though, things really changed. I joined leadership of Moody. Moody's ISF. I was the chaplain for them. And the spiritual coordinator, I think, was the official position. And I got to welcome in new students who were much like myself. And I really wanted to be a positive influence on them. And I did. I think that, for the most part, there were good things. I made great relationships with a lot of the guys who are just a year below me. However, during that year, a lot of hard stuff began to surface for me. A lot of repressed memories and repressed emotions and feelings of the pain that I had felt over the years. I think what was the big gateway to those emotions kind of coming out and just bleeding it all over the place into all of life was I was finally somewhere I think I felt safe to talk about and process that. And I think once my mind picked up on that, just these memories started to open up and healing. One of those things was the sensation of feeling like I was really messed up, like I was a monster, I guess was the, if I were to put words to that feeling, like I just can't fit in. I belong nowhere. I go from place to place, and I use people's emotions and feed off of that, and I'm too afraid to share my own because I'm terrified of being hurt and rejected. Why is that? And I felt like the solution then was just to tell people what was going on, or everything. I thought, if I'll be transparent, this will be part of the healing, and, I'll be okay, and I'm tough. I can fight through this. I ended up sharing a lot of things that I look back now, I wish I hadn't shared. Struggles and how I managed those pains were not healthy as well. I would seclude myself. I would bottle up my frustrations and try to repress them more. And there were not good consequences out of that. So that sophomore year, I I was having that really hard. I was really having a hard time, and bottling up was not helping, even though I tried really hard, because that's what I did before. You know, I didn't feel like my parents really understood what was going on, and looking back and talking with them, they didn't. There was just no resources that we knew of. A lot of them I discovered while I was with Mucapa, and going to their camps that they offered, and meeting people that were professionals in this area. I think one of these professionals was Michelle Phoenix, and she wrote quite a bit about this stuff, and I began like just researching and reading, and I was like, oh, wow, there are other messed up people like me. But no one's quite like me, though. I have got deeper, darker stuff, I felt like, you know. And I did. You know, my transition from Brazil to America, and I guess vice versa, America to Brazil, was really rough. When I moved to Brazil, I was 8, and I had a really hard time connecting with the kids my age. There was a massive cultural difference between us. Even though I had my family, my dad's entire side of the family was very welcoming of me, very loving, and they were awesome. They were the best. But when I would go to school, it wasn't so loving, and got bullied a lot for just being an American, not doing so well in school. I was a terrible soccer player, and yeah, I had a tough time fitting in at first, and that was when I first learned how to fist fight and cuss up a storm, and I was all of 9, you know, so I would be coming home with these stories, and my parents were shocked, like, oh my gosh, like, what is this you're learning, you know? But for me, it was I needed to survive, and I needed to talk like these guys talk, to be tough, and I needed to know how to fight and take care of myself, and it was hard, like, so moving to the States, I would tell some of these stories to my peers, and they wouldn't believe me, like, no way, you know, you didn't, you know, get thrown to the ground and beat up into almost a pulp, you know, because you ticked someone off at a soccer game. I'm like, oh, no, that, yeah, that happened, you know. Or I was really rough around the edges, too. And I'd say once I was 13, 14, I began cussing without a problem. It's a lot of pent up angst. And I was a really angry kid. Going then to Moody in my sophomore year, this stuff started surfacing, like, no, I'm real, like, I have a very dark sense of humor. I cuss up a lot, you know, and when someone ticks me off, the first thing I want to do is just drive my fists into them, and you don't understand, like, yeah, I'm jogging with you guys, I don't really belong, and I'm feeling the same things as you guys are feeling, however, there's more here. I don't know quite what it was, because I could only reference when I was, you know, when that shadow would come out, that darker side, but I never got to the root of what was going on. So what really sent it off, though, was this incident that came up. So during chapel one day, it was at a big event where we were welcoming newcomers onto our campus, prospective students. I wanted to avoid. part of my isolation was kicking in during that time, and I was drained by people, so I decided to sit in the back where it was a little bit quieter, where the international students were. I wanted to get away because everyone was being so noisy, and I had to go to chapel. I don't think I had any cuts left, and so I go to the back, and I sit there, and there was then a student who was younger than me. He comes by, and he starts making this noise. And I had told him, you know, not to do that. And please, you know, go sit in the front. Don't bother me. You know, like, if you want to be noisy, go to where all the other noisy people are. And this guy, I mean, he was a sweet guy, but he didn't really think through. He didn't have very good social skills. Yeah. And so he instead got closer to me and then erupted into, like, noise and was screaming and hollering, you know, because this is part of the tradition at Moody to scream day one during this day one event and just be wild. And it's fun, you know, it's a lot of fun, but I just was not in the place at the time to really deal with that. So I felt like someone was, you know, shaking up my territory, and there was a lot of stuff that rushed through my mind now that I think about it. But what happened, though, was I blacked out. And next thing I know it, I'm punching this guy in the groin, you know, and I like, once I realized what I did, I was like, oh my goodness, you know, I am this monster, you know, and I had refused help for so long. And yeah, that really terrified me because, you know, whenever I had a problem or I was, you know, bullied or got in a fight, I usually just, I would black out and do this thing, you know, where I was like an uncaged animal. You know, you're not thinking, you're just swinging and hurting people. And this would happen not even just like physically punching people, but also like yelling and screaming and saying very hurtful things to people and just tearing them apart so that they could leave me alone. And so I did this, you know, but I saw that this problem bled over into a younger student, someone who was supposed to be under my care, you know, as a leader of a student group. And I saw that there was a problem. And so I finally was like, you know what, this needs to get dealt with some way or another. And so the next day during my work break, I pulled up the paperwork and I called the counseling services on my campus here at Moody and got the paperwork emailed to me, and I filled that out and then, turned it in. And that was really hard. Part of that paperwork is to be, you know, honest with yourself. And one of the questions there was like, are you feeling suicidal? And I had to be honest. And I remember there being a couple of very bleak nights where I would stare out of my window on the 19th floor of my dorm, you know, the dormitory, that was where my dorm room was. And I would just imagine, you know, myself throwing myself out the window, or think about throwing myself at the CTA line. Yeah, you know, very, very, like, the whole litany of different things. And so, yeah, I'd be honest and honest and honest. And then I went to the counsel. Then I finally sat down and I began regularly going to counseling. And the things that came out were really hard to talk about because I was getting at that root that I didn't know was there, I guess you could say. But then I was discovering and getting closer. I'm like, I think I know what this is. And that was when it was really dark and really scary, because you get closer and closer to what really terrifies you. And it's inside of you. You know, it's not so much the memories as it is that malevolence you had to face. And so in counseling, my first round of counseling wasn't that successful. We talked a lot about surface things that were going on compared to the deeper things that would come up later in life, but it wasn't enough to really mitigate the anxiety and the anger and the depression. So I went on, and I against the advice of teachers who I came and I talked to get some help, you know, get a wiser ear, and against the advice of, I think, some students, friends of mine suggested that, you know, maybe I take a semester or go to better, you know, more professional counseling. And I was like, no, this will do. This will, I kept falling into the same trap that I could take care of myself and not admit that things were actually tougher than they actually were. I go in the next year, new round. This time I am serving as vice president of MUCAPA, and it all seems to go just downhill from there, emotional-wise. As far as friends and people whom I got close to and the experiences I gained, I can look back and say I you know, there was a lot of good memories. There was also really, you know, tough times. We had a really hard leadership challenges that came up. The person that was our supervisor was really challenging to work with. She expected one thing when we expected another, and, you know, there seemed to be a disconnect in communication on both sides. I can say on both sides. And I was caught up in the middle of all of it while being depressed, full of anxiety, and with all these stressors, you know, and I was about to flip. I was about to absolutely crush somebody because I was so angry and I just wanted it to end. On top of that, it was a very hostile environment on campus with the 2016 elections for the presidency. Yeah, so all that safety just melted away, and I felt caged and trapped, and that anger just kept building and building, and every time I caught myself, I would just break down and cry because that monster, I needed to keep it caged. I didn't want to let it out. You know, how do you end this? And then that's when I tapped out. I went home for Christmas break, and my parents saw who I was, where I was at, and they were scared. If I'm gonna be honest, they were very scared because I was in such a fragile state. At one point, I was elated and happy to be with my family, and then really quickly, I was sad and just full of grief. And you know, at one point, I'm laughing. At another point, I'm weeping. At one point, I'm so angry. And at another point, I've just got this great, you know, wonderful sense of humor. And it seemed like I was really jogging along with people. But then when, as time to come to school came closer and closer, I just began really shutting down. And my mom and dad were not going to let me go back to campus in the state that I was in. So I stayed home. I took the semester off and I stayed home. And I began to actually rest. And then I met a counselor. First I bumped into my old friend from church. He was he's a youth pastor at my home church. And then the next day, after we met up and talked, and you know, he was hearing me out, and man, I was full of despair. The next day, he actually called me up, and because he just had breakfast with an acquaintance of his who happened to be a psychologist. A clinical psychologist, I believe. And I began meeting with this guy regularly afterwards, and I began healing. Part of that healing was to stare into the darkness of what was going on and to be honest and to talk about what happened to me. And there was a many litany of things to talk about, you know, between the bullying and then the rough transitions from America, Brazil, then Brazil, America, such a young age. I, later in life, you know, and as I began talking and processing, one of the things that came up was abuse that I had suffered by my grandmother's second husband. And, you know, this guy was a monster. I mean, a truly malevolent person. Someone who would just want to hurt you for the sake of getting pleasure out of it. And then he would quickly hide it, and he was able to just mask it up. And my grandmother couldn't see it. My parents noticed it and tried to do something, but nothing could be done. And so this haunting figure was actually at the root of what I was so terrified of, and what was coming out. This explosive anger was coming from this need to react against what I thought were, you know, being cornered and being verbally abused, being beat up, you know, by kids, and you know, all this was swirling and swirling and swirling, and it came down to this person and what he did to me. I mean, I was young, and in this time of healing, it's weird how the mind does this, but it was like a veil was lifted off, and I began having, you know, visual night terrors of, you know, that of the events of when this person hurt me. I began to just really stare and, you know, walk into the cave and, like, confront that monster, you know. And then the process of facing it and defeating it and then walking out was hard, too. I mean, it's all part of that healing process. And I healed. It was a very strange feeling. I remember sitting down and I talked with my counselor one day as I was driving to work. I told him, you know, as I was driving to work, I had this feeling like my soul had just sat back into my body. And it was like I could feel. And I didn't know what that was like. My counselor was like, yeah, that's what happens when you don't feel detached. That's what happens when you feel safe and you're beginning to heal. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. That I took those experiences and that healing, and I went back to campus and I continued my studies, and I'm still continuing my studies. I'm still healing. I've gotten closure on many, many fronts of the hurt that I had gone through, and processing all of the things that you've heard about from different people in these past podcasts. I could say that I know some of these people, and I can definitely relate to what they went through on those levels. But there was other, you know, there are other things that everybody goes through. But I think missionary kids, they get it tough because, you know, you got to be strong on the missions field. You had to be strong from your family and the family unit so that you guys can perform well and, you know, take the kingdom of God to these places. And so the pressure to try to bind those dark feelings up, or feeling angry, feeling betrayed, feeling used or abused, or, you know, things happen in life and no one is truly safe from when malevolent people come and hurt you. It will happen if you're a kid, and it can happen when you're an adult. But I think one of the biggest things that I've learned is that, yeah, this stuff can happen to you, and there is help, and you can get it, and you can work through it. And, you know, you can get help from church. You can get help from people who have studied most of their lives to understand the mind and have a heart to care for people and to heal them. And there are those people out there. It's not all to just pick your brain and to use you, although that can, you know, I remember in my case, that's what I was afraid of, you know, someone start picking my mind and finding out I was actually this ugly person. And it happened. I met this guy, and I spilled my guts, and he got to see the ugly. And trained people are good for that. So are friends. The guy that I mentioned before, my future roommate, he is a very gifted person in listening to you and talking to you. And he became one of my closest friends. And yeah, you know, having good friends around is a good healing thing as well. Sometimes just those groups are not enough. Sometimes you do need to sit down and you just need to be honest, and you need to have the right people to go through that. And then going back to church and worshiping God and continue reading scriptures and being in the presence of his kingdom, you know, his people. And those were the things I learned, you know, getting involved with the church and taking one day at a time.
What I love about Juwabi's story is the hope that he tells it with. He went through some really, really dark things, but he has such a tone of hope the entire time out. You can tell that these demons that he has struggled with, he has defeated them. And I love how unashamed he is. This is the third time I've heard this story. He gave his testimony my freshman year, and then we've been just friends, so he's told me more and more. And always that tone of hope, that sense of healing. It has been a long, dark road, but I think the biggest thing that I want to emphasize out of this story is the importance of counseling and the importance of seeking help. If you've related to anything this semester, please talk to someone on Mocapa or get some help either clinically. I know a lot of people are averse to counseling, but it is truly an incredible thing. I've gone through counseling, and I'm consistently contemplating going back to it because I remember I just went through a lot of processing in my life and healed from a lot of things when I'm just able to talk it out with someone who is completely unrelated and will not judge. And like Juwabi said, you're able to really face those demons and do the solid work and surround yourself with fantastic people. A group that is fantastic and a great set of people to surround yourselves with is Mocapa. This is coming out the week before classes start here at Moody. So if you are a Moody student, you're listening, and you're not plugged in with Mocapa, please get plugged in with Mocapa. There's a lot of incredible things. And if you're new to Moody, welcome. And Mocapa is wonderful. We're going to be taking a little bit of a break just so I can rest and get adjusted to classes, but we will be back with more tales as the semester begins in September. I'm slowly working on getting more stories, but September is going to be when I'm going to roll out season 2. It's been incredible hanging out with you guys this summer. And if you need help, or you want to just talk, or you have ideas, or would love to be on the podcast, please reach out. My Facebook is TCK Tales. Yeah, it's TCK Tales on Facebook. So find me on Facebook, like the page, reach out, message, all that fun stuff. Before I go, I just want to thank a couple people as the season comes to an end. I want to thank XN Radio for allowing us to be a part of this amazing network, XN Radio Network. Check out all the other shows that they have associated with them. They have a lot of really great shows and really great content similar to this. Just search XN Radio wherever you're listening to this. Please like and subscribe and tell your friends as we move forward to season 2. They can binge listen to all 7 episodes that we have available. You can pretty much listen to all of them in a 1-hour workout. It's fantastic. That's why I kind of kept them short as they prepare for season 2. I want to thank Ben Somebody for providing our soundtrack and the music that you guys have been enjoying and listening to. And I want to thank Mukapa for providing me with the amazing storytellers that you guys kind of got to know and meet. And I look forward to more. I'll see you later. I am John, and this has been TCK Tales.